This is Packer and Durham on ACCM and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Cast of stars in the Power Hour, Wes, as you pointed out, Katie George is back on the show for the first time this calendar year. And Docs Aiken, who's rocking and rolling with the UVA men's lacrosse team, we've talked about him a bunch, and now we'll get a chance to talk to him later this hour. 844-SAY-ACCN, though, is the number if you'd like to participate. There you go.
Yeah, and if you want to hop in here on these coaching hires that have been made since 1992, we touched on this in the first hour. It's a fascinating read that Andy Bitter and Manny Navarro put together over at The Athletic. Taking it 1 to 43 pack, I guess it is,
49.
in these hires. Yeah, 49. I mean, just an amazing list of kind of and how do you go about putting it together? And remember now, when we start talking about these hires, we mentioned the top five earlier, and it's interesting because it's Dabo Swinney, Jimbo Fisher, David Cutcliffe, Ralph Reach, and Jim Groves, the top five. And I'm just giving you 6 through 10 here as kind of a precursor. 6 was George O'Leary. 7 was Paul Johnson. 8 was Mark Richt. 9 was Tommy Bowden. And 10 is Mack Brown. Now, give me some thoughts on that back five, because, you know, you talk about Georgia Tech. They've appeared in the championship game. Paul Johnson certainly had a big hand in that. The only other championship game appearance was under Chan Gailey in 2006 when they lost to Wake Forest. Mack Brown, they're only classifying Mack Brown in the last couple of years here, Pac. 15-10 and 11-7 in the ACC in 2 seasons. Previously 7-17 and 13-23 in the 3 years leading up to Mack Brown. So that was interesting to me. Mark Richt, Tommy Bowden, 8 and 9 on that list, by the way.
I thought Mack was a little high. I mean, if your snapshot is just a couple years, he's done a tremendous job, don't get me wrong. And it may turn out to be even better than that. I think it will be, given what the hype's going to be for North Carolina football in 2021, the way he's recruiting. And again, he's a brilliant coach. He's won a national championship. He already turned North Carolina around once in his career. When you remember, when he got to North Carolina in the get-go in the late 80s, he didn't win a game for a while. And next thing you know, by the time he left town to go to Texas, North Carolina was a top 10 club. So he knows what he's doing. But to put him 10th just on a snapshot of 2 years, I thought was a little I thought that was a little convenient and lenient from that perspective. But the other names that are on there, I mean, Johnson did a great job. O'Leary, I mean, I really didn't have a problem with it. I mean, Tommy Bowden being 9th. I mean, got to keep in mind now, Clemson was a
– I thought that was high.
I would have probably said that too.
That was a little high.
But keep in mind, Clemson in the late 90s was kind of a train wreck. Tommy West, and, you know, it was just a program that was still talking about what Danny Ford did 10 years ago, right? I mean, that's kind of where they were living in the past. And I know Tommy Bowden did some good things. The one thing he did was he owned South Carolina. I mean, he just absolutely – he'd see the University of South Carolina, and he'd just go, all right, well, that's a W. And so really, if you took that away, you can't. But if you took that away – was there an ACC championship? No. I mean, there were some spikes of kind of inconsistency. It's kind of where some Clemsoning stuff was going on. They'd win a great game, and then next week they'd lose to somebody they had no business doing. So, you know, Tommy in the top 10 might be a bit of a stretch. I think Mack Brown, given just a two-year snapshot, might have been a bit of a stretch. But, again, this is what this list does of the 49er on there. You could stick people left and right. But, you know, Mark Richt – yeah, you know, I was good with all that. I thought their top five for the most part was in the neighborhood, which is kind of where we're going. So, again, if you don't get The Athletic, I'd suggest that you do it. They do a great job. You got to be a subscriber to read it.
Yeah.
But it's a fun list. It's, again, it's a perfect April, May, June conversation piece. And that's kind of where we are right now on the show with it, too.
All right, let's talk about kind of where this fits. You think about the current coaching list, right? And we've already said that, you know, you've got Dabo Swinney and David Cutcliffe and, you know, things of that nature. But let's take a couple schools here that have guys ahead of the current coach. So, like, if you're Mike Norvell, that's a pretty steep hill. You got to win a national championship to catch Jimbo Fisher, right? I mean, we all understand that. And he knows that. That's why you take the Florida State job. Dave Clawson and Jim Groves, an interesting conversation. They're not terribly far apart in a list of, you know, nearly 50 people. But is Dave Clawson, if he gets to an ACC championship, does that equate him to Jim Grobe? You follow me here? I think that's kind of what, you know, like in Jeff Collins' case. He's a couple of years in at Georgia Tech. George O'Leary, Paul Johnson are on that list ahead of Jeff Collins. What do you look at? Do you have to go to the ACC championship? Do you have to go to a New Year's Day 6 bowl? You know, catching your predecessor, Jeff Hafley at Boston College. You know, he passes – he's ahead of Steve Adazio. He's ahead of Frank Spaziani already. But Jeff Jagosinski's a guy who is ranked ahead of him. Remember, he had Matt Ryan, went to the ACC championship game. I find that parallel to this interesting only because we're always in the present and careful sometimes to examine the past, I think.
Well, where would you like me to start? Dave Clawson, you know, when Jim Grobe won the ACC championship at Wake Forest, if I said to you, and I'm not taking anything away. I mean, that was an incredible accomplishment. You know how I feel about Jim Grobe.
Sure.
But where was Florida State and Clemson when Wake Forest won the championship? Right? I mean, those are the two teams in this league. And I know Miami fans are going to bark at me, but really Miami, since they've been in the ACC, has not been Florida State or Clemson. But where was Florida State and Clemson when Jim Grobe won it? Now you go to Dave Clawson. Hey, to say Dave Clawson's got to win the ACC championship to get on the level of Jim Grobe, I would tell you that Dave Clawson has a much higher hill to climb, given that it was during a Florida State winning a national championship and Dabo dominating and being one of the first or the second best football program in the country. Whoa.
Right.
What was that?
You all right?
Yeah, I think we had a major crash upstairs. I'm making sure somebody didn't come flying through here. But it's just a different world that we're living in as far as Wake Forest in terms of, hey, we got to beat Florida State and Clemson in our division. I mean, right. You know, again, I'm talking as if Florida State gets their act together and gets back to that level. Clemson's a beast. So I think you got to, when you make comparisons of Coach A versus Coach B, I mean, I think you got to put everything into the combination here. I mean, what's the league look like? I mean, you know, from 2000 to 2010, the ACC looked very different than it did from 2010 to 2020. Very different. Totally different.
All right, let me give you one here because in these rankings, okay, the rankings that Manny and Andy did on The Athletic, Chuck Amato is 14, Dave Dorn is 16. Dave Dorn, to me, has done a great job building NC State. He's already passed Chuck Amato in wins. To me, Amato had the splash early, right, Pac? And then late, it wasn't good. The struggle to rebuild was real for Dave Dorn, and it took a while. But I think there's payoff for NC State. But as you said earlier this week, now it's got to be in the big win. You got to get that marquee win.
Yeah, you know, NC State, I believe in their history, has had one season in which they've won double digits. And I said this to you the other day, that to me, if I'm an NC State fan, Dave's done a nice job in giving you that 7-8-9, you know, combination. Can you bust the door down and get to be a double-digit winning team that say, hey, guess what, we could go to a major bowl? Chuck Amato gave you, I believe, that one year that NC State won 11 with Philip Rivers. Now, did they win the league? No, but that was a good football team. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Chuck Amato, in my opinion, did a great job to rally Wolfpack Nation. All of us at NC State said, you know what? We're going to be invested in football. We're going to put money into facility upgrades, recruiting nationally, and all that stuff. And I give Amato all the credit in the world. Now, there were a lot of folks that thought, man, the guy's a clown act. What are you doing? I think there was a method to his madness in terms of getting people stirred up and ready to go, and NC State bought into it. Now, did they ever knock the door down and win the title? No, but there was that pizzazz to it. Now, did it sustain itself? It did not, as you pointed out. Dave Dorn has been a much more kind of quieter, calming influence, but NC State, to their credit, kind of built up the interest in football, and I think that's where Amato gets all his credit. Now it's up for Dave Dorn to say, guess what? We've kind of stabilized it. We can be a 7-8-9-1 kind of team. Can you get to the next level? That becomes the million-dollar question. So, I think there's two different deals there.
No, I'm good with you. All right, here's another one before we get to the break. Bobby Petrino is 17 on the list, and Scott Satterfield is 20. It's not a lot. That's not very far apart. and yet the temperament of the programs feels entirely different. Now, the successes of Petrino, there's a little bit more of a body of work to measure. Lamar Jackson, the Heisman Trophy, all those type things. And you got two tenures of Petrino that, by the way, are very different. And you've only got a couple of years of Sat in charge at Louisville. But yet they're close enough in the rankings, I think, you, a little bit like Dorn and Amato, I think it's fair you can kind of load this conversation.
Well, I think they both did some good things against, you know, Scott's still doing it, right? So that's, again, his snapshot. Yep. Like Mack Brown. I don't know if there's enough paperwork yet where you could sit there and justify a position, whether it's top 10, top 20, whatever you want it to be. But I do like him as a coach. I think he brings a lot to the table. Bobby Petrino, again, had great success when Louisville wasn't in the ACC in the first go-around, right?
That's
remember
it.
Bobby Petrino and Louisville knocked off, I think, Wake in the Orange Bowl, if I'm not mistaken. That was the showdown the year Jim Grubb won the league. And Bobby's had spikes all over his career. I thought the second go-around at Louisville, obviously it did not end well, but you knew what he was as a coach. And again, I think Satterfield's totally different. Different persona, different across the board in almost every aspect of your program. So, again, put them wherever you want. Again, if you want to put them both in the top 20, I'm fine. I mean, there's only 49 of these to pick from. I do think they're upper half selections and hires. But I think they're both in different places when they took over and what they've been able to accomplish to date. That's how I'd answer that question.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
How's it feel to be in black and maroon?
Feels good. It's garnet and gold, but I feel what you're saying.
Presented by New York Life. That would be Packer and Durham right there. It's time for her to make her 2021 debut on the show. We haven't seen her.
I cannot
believe
we just
did that. Haven't talked to her
that.
Since December of 2019. All right. What are you saying?
Not the way we make friends on this show. Not the way we make friends on this show.
Boy,
that's not the way we do business.
That's a whole different tone than I heard on Monday's Best and Worst. I'll tell you that right now. Let's go to the coveted invite. She joins us live with. Hey, wait a minute. Hey, coveted.
I thought about it.
So, what colors we got there?
About it, but looks. Looks like maroon to me, but I guess you could say it's garnet, and this is definitely black. I knew you guys were going to do that. Unbelievable. What a welcome. I haven't seen you all year, and that's how we're going to start this show off?
You know, what can
Wouldn't
I tell you?
Wouldn't expect anything less.
That's exactly, you know what? That is exactly right. That would be exactly right. So coveted.
Can I explain myself for a second?
Yes, ma'am. Of course.
Sure.
You guys are veterans in this business. You've been doing this a long time. Sometimes you, in your head, have the gist of a question that you want to ask. I was going down the path of asking the question. Words were coming out of my mouth. And then as I got to the question about the jersey, I remember thinking, FSU has a funky name to their colors, don't they? Don't they? Don't what? And I wasn't getting there. And before I knew it, black and maroon was coming out of my mouth because he was wearing a black penny due to the fact that he's a quarterback and he didn't want to get hit that day. And here we are. So I apologize to all FSU fans. I can guarantee I will never make that mistake again because FSU fans on Twitter are fierce. They don't come to play.
You know, while you were talking and explaining that answer, I was going to ask you a question, but I lost train of thought because I got blinded again by that gigantic, enormous rock on your left hand with the sun hitting it or the lighting. And I was going to ask a follow-up, and then all of a sudden, I felt like a blind man. I was like, man alive, that Katie George now, she's got the bling. I mean, do you have the bling or what? I'm telling you, it's strong.
My fiance did a very good job. I was pleasantly surprised. Let me just say that when you popped the question.
Let me tell you, Katie George. Yeah. You know what? You are rolling right. I don't know what else is going on in your life, but when you were giving me the explanation, I was like, whoa, I'm going to get some shades on, man. Katie George has got the bling going on. Love it. Love
the
it.
Worst.
Yeah. I got to tell you, Katie, it's been a great day for Packer. He's been rolling hard. He has been. Packer's had A-plus game here today on a lot of fronts.
Is it a robbery? Yes, it is. Katie George, yes, it is a robbery.
I just started watching that, by the way.
It's really good.
We started watching last night, so thank you for the recommendation.
You got it.
Yeah. All right. So, Katie, we've talked to all four competing ACC teams, right, for the NCAA volleyball tournament, which begins today in Omaha. This whole idea, and I know you played in these club events and these big convention centers and all this, and yeah. I'm starting to believe that you almost got to have, like, that club volleyball mentality in order to get through the first couple of rounds of this, or else you're going to be packed and going home. It just seems to me that if you can't have that flashback experience to what that mentality is, your team's not going to be able to survive this event.
Yeah, it's a great analogy, Wes. It's going to feel like a club tournament for all of these teams who have to go into the convention center starting today at noon on different ESPN platforms, which I'm so excited just to see the setup, just to watch. I don't come into coverage until we get to the Sweet 16. I'll be up in Bristol calling games with Eric Fried. But I'm just excited the fact that, A, we're here. You know, there were so many questions back in the fall when they decided to split the season for some conferences. So, like the ACC, we had our teams competing in the fall semester as well as the spring semester. Just the fact that we're having an NCAA tournament is a feat in and of itself. I just wish there was 64 teams competing, because I feel for those teams who felt like in a normal year they would have done enough to get in. So I feel for the seniors on those teams who were on the bubble and missed. But I am very excited for, of course, my alma mater, Louisville, to get going on Thursday. But today we see Notre Dame, Pitt, and Georgia Tech hit the floor. But, yes, you are so right. You have to have tunnel vision. But the good thing, any volleyball player who's playing at the D1 level has come from a very successful club team. So they have the experience of playing in these massive convention centers with a lot of hectic play going on around them. So I think that most of these girls are prepared for this moment starting today.
Katie, Pitt's obviously the last couple of years has been kind of the standard in the league. And I'm going to allow you to get to your Louisville hat on here for a second, as opposed to being an unbiased reporter. But how cool was it to see Louisville get back and win the ACC championship? Because they really did have a tremendous year.
Yeah, they did. And I think that's a credit to the job that Danny Busboom Kelly has done. You know, I would be lying if I said I was surprised last season when they made it to the Elite Eight and they knocked off Texas on Texas's home court. I was actually at Baylor. I guess that's Waco down in Texas. Don't want to make that mistake on air. I was calling games for that regional final. And actually, I had the early game, so I had a chance to drive all the way to Austin, which was like an hour and a half, and catch Louisville's game against Minnesota. And what was impressive, I thought, about this team was they were very young, but yet they didn't seem to feel any kind of pressure being in that big moment. Like playing Texas in the Sweet 16 on Texas's home floor when Texas was a top 4 or 5 team at that time is a very big deal. And they were so nonchalant and they knocked them off. And then unfortunately they lost to Minnesota, and Minnesota has a great team under Hugh McCutcheon. But I think the fact that now they return so many of their starters, Tori Dilfer is a phenomenal setter, the daughter of Trent Dilfer, a Super Bowl champion. And then they added Anna DeBeer on the outside, who's a freshman who went to my alma mater, Assumption High School. She's got a cannon of an arm and has been a huge lift. Like, they have the experience from their core group of making a deep run in the NCAA tournament a year ago. I think that they're only going to draw from that as they start and get going on Thursday. They have a bye because they were a top 16 seed. So they'll wait to face the winner of San Diego or Texas A&M Corpus Christi on Thursday at noon.
Katie, anybody like Michelle Calle, who's done a remarkable job at Georgia Tech, gets them back in the tournament for the first time in 12 years. I mean, to me, I start looking at a team like that, they're just kind of playing. They should play carefree. I mean, happy to be there, yes. It's a great step in a limited team field for a school like Georgia Tech to expand the volleyball base of the ACC by making the NCAA tournament.
You know, Wes, I was hopeful that they were going to make it a year ago because they had a kind of tough start to the season, a slow start. But, man, halfway through conference play, they kicked it into gear. You mentioned Michelle Collier. I absolutely love her. She's a Brazilian. She is so passionate. She is so fiery in the way that she approaches the game. And she recruits players just like her. They have the same personality. And when you're playing for a Brazilian, I will tell you the identity of Brazilian volleyball is phenomenal, phenomenal defense. So the great thing about Georgia Tech is they frustrate you. You can't get a kill against them. They don't make it easy on you time and time again. And at that point, as an opponent, you start making mistakes. And so Georgia Tech forces other teams out of their comfort zone and to make unforced errors. And that's why I think that they've had so much success this year. I mean, Julia Bergman is massive, and she has such a strong, strong arm swing. Maddie McKissick has done a phenomenal job running the show down at Georgia Tech. I'm really excited for them. I hope that they can come into this tournament and start making some waves because they deserve it. They've worked so hard, and that's a credit to Collier just getting this program back on the map.
Katie, all right, crystal ball. From an ACC perspective, four teams are in. We know the schedule, Wednesday, Thursday. What would be a reasonable run for the ACC in the tournament?
Well, I hope that Louisville, starting there, can make it back to an Elite Eight. I think that they're capable and have the firepower to do so. I want to see Georgia Tech make it to a Sweet 16. I think that their defense can get that done. I think that that would be a phenomenal feat. And who knows, maybe they could upset a few more. You know, Notre Dame's kind of the question mark for me. I think that they've, you know, bounced back and had a great year in conference play between the fall and spring semesters. I just don't know how well it's going to bode once you get it to the national stage and you're playing teams from a variety of different conferences. You know, for me, Pitt probably has the most pressure on them. Kayla Lund, as you guys know, I know you're friends of hers.
Right.
She is incredible, and she deserves every accolade that she has gotten. I was very disappointed. Last season was the perfect path for Pittsburgh to make it to the Final Four in their hometown and get to play in front of a home crowd. And they were knocked out in the second round early, which, you know, surprised everybody in the college volleyball landscape because they were a top five team at that point. They had won the ACC. You expected them to make a deep run, and then they didn't. So now I'm expecting them, yes, to take care of business against LIU today, but I want to see them make a deep run. They have been too good for too long to fall short in the NCAA tournament, and I think this is the next step for Dan Fisher. And of course, with Kayla Lund being a senior, you want to see her have a good run in the NCAA tournament as she goes out on top.
Yeah, it's a good point. Kayla Lund has been fantastic for volleyball in the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting. Completely unique environment. Once again, though, Pack, let's not make any mistake. A smashing 2021 debut by the coveted invite here today.
I'm expecting nothing less. I mean, the expectations of the coveted invite are always a 10 on a 10 scale. She talked about the Brazilian, the passion of Brazilian volleyball. It's what we get with the passion of former Miss Kentuckys who can do anything you ask. I mean, anything you ask, rock on hand, good attitude, a little color issues every now and then. But other than that, spectacular.
That's all right. Other than
spectacular.
That. All right. And one more thing before you go, Katie. Mm-hmm. If the flag's flying, Kentuckiana's buying.
Without a doubt. Hey, are you guys going to come join me at the Kentucky Derby this year? Are we? You guys still declining my invitations?
Oh,
excuse me?
Really?
Did that get lost in the mail, or do you only do that when you come on the show for the first time in 21? I mean, are you kidding?
So disappointing.
No,
so disappointing.
I'm not in charge of USPS. Pack, so maybe it did get lost in the mail.
Oh, yes.
I've heard that they've been having some trouble as of late. So.
Certainly didn't get the text message. I didn't get an email.
Didn't get a
text message.
Yeah, okay.
Invite.
I see how you roll.
Great. An invite to the Derby.
Now that we got a little bling, we got a little attitude now. I see how we're going on this now.
Yeah, we'll see how this gets. Yeah.
All right, Drew,
walking
I'm
around.
Off now. I've done the 10 minutes that I agreed to.
Okay,
Drew.
That's it. Thanks. All right, Katie. Be well. Great to see you.
So good
take
to
care.
See you
all
guys.
The best.
Same.
Thanks for having me.
Be good.
Right.
Bye, have
guys.
Fun.
Yep.
Have a good day.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
We go from the coveted invite, who's covering the NCAA Volleyball Championships. We go to men's lacrosse at UVA. And, Wes, we've talked about this guy a bunch during the lacrosse season. Doc Zaikin, and he's been getting the job done. He now joins us from Charlottesville. Docs, good morning, man. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure having you on. I just said to Wes, we've talked about you so much, I can't believe we haven't had you on the show yet. But what a crazy year, right? I mean, this league is so ridiculously good. And you realize that, hey, every time you go out there, you better have your A game or else, right?
No, absolutely. It's, I mean, the parity, just you never can guess what's going to happen. You know, every team's so talented. And, yeah, no, you're right. You know, you got to have a great week of practice. You got to prep really well. And you got to get some lucky bounces for sure. But, you know, all these teams are incredible. So it's a gauntlet.
Docs, any way to qualify what last Saturday's victory over Carolina meant to you guys, just in terms of the way the season has gone for you and Coach Tiffany?
Yeah, I think it's kind of represents the transformation our team's been through. I think early on, kind of started off a little slow. You know, offense wasn't clicking too well. And I think just over the course of 10 games, it's you've seen the progression of our offense. We've been able to move the ball so much better. There's a lot more trust and, more goals too. So that's nice.
Speaking of progression and transition, how do you go from a football mentality physically to a lacrosse mentality and what you go through from a physical standpoint there? Is that difficult?
I think the mindset stays the same in any sport. I think it's just you want to compete and you want to win. And that was kind of the ultimate decision for me was – knowing that, you know, there was going to be a season for lacrosse and felt super comfortable with that. But I think physically, yeah, I think my conditioning definitely lacked for a long time trying to come back with had a few extra pounds I had to shed before I could, you know, run up and down the field without like falling over. But I think just the competitive mindset kind of stays the same in any sport. And you can kind of mold your body, you know, with the sport as long as you kind of have that edge. So
you had an interesting timeline with all this, right? I mean, you got a degree from Virginia last spring. And then you were going to use the year to go to Villanova. You got family ties. You're from Philadelphia. I know you've got relatives that have gone to Villanova and played lacrosse, but you were going to play football. And then when the FCS got wiped out in the fall, you were able to pivot back. Number one, I'm kind of glad the door was left open for that, for everybody involved. But to go through that mentally and to make that kind of decision, okay, I'm going to graduate, I'm going to move, I'm going to give this football thing a run, and then come back to play lacrosse, that had to be a wild, I don't know, month, 6 weeks for you?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And honestly didn't happen until towards the beginning of January for winter break. And just talking to some people, it seemed more of a possibility as time went along, and kind of the FCS was pushing for this spring season, and it didn't seem like a full guarantee. So I kind of felt like it was important to explore another option. And you know, I was fortunate enough that, you know, everything fell into place. I got really, really lucky with classes and eligibility and all health things like that, which I don't fully understand. So I'm glad. I just kind of hoped and prayed and it worked out. But I just got really, really fortunate. That's kind of the moral of the story.
Docs, I know that Wes just asked you about the big win against North Carolina. I guess you can't get too high or too low. You hear that cliche all the time in sports. But given the world of ACC men's lacrosse, I guess when you've gone through these crazy games where, hey, every competition you're playing somebody in the top 10, at least it seems that way, how do you put it in the rearview mirror, whether it's a great win like the game against North Carolina or maybe a tough loss? How difficult is it to put it in the rearview mirror?
I would say it's definitely a little difficult because you want to celebrate a big win like that. You kind of want to say, oh, I think we're getting better. But I think it is also a little bit easy to put it in the rearview mirror just because I mean, I think, you know, we lost to Syracuse and North Carolina, and having that rematch on the schedule already was really cool for us to look forward to. So in terms of those two games, I think that'll be pretty easy. But you can't rest on your laurels with any win. We don't play Notre Dame on the regular season schedule a second time, and we're fortunate enough to edge them out a bit. So we just like it's definitely a little bit tough, but with all the competition, you can't rest on your laurels, and you know, there's a lot of big games coming up, so got to be excited about those.
All right, you mentioned that tomorrow night, Duke, flashback a couple of years ago, great semifinal match with the Blue Devils. I mean, you guys seemingly bring out the best in one another, don't you?
Yeah, and unfortunately, they've been kind of the upper hand on that rivalry since I've been here, and I think for a long time. And we were super fortunate to play them in Philadelphia in 2019, and you know, edge them out by a goal in double overtime, which was definitely a lifelong memory. But yeah, I mean, they definitely bring out the best in us. They are super athletic, they're super talented, and you know, they just know how to win. Plain and simple. So we gotta play our best for sure, and I'm really looking forward to a Thursday night game against those guys for sure.
Docs, Lars Tiffany, your coach, has been really one of our favorite guys to talk to, because we get into stuff that has nothing to do with lacrosse. And I can only imagine playing for him. It's got to be fun, too, because, hey, we're talking about boats, books or philosophy, or there's always something with Lars, and that's why we love to have conversations with him. Playing for him, give me a couple examples of him throwing kind of some curveballs to you guys to understand, hey, there's more to life than just playing men's lacrosse.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have these sessions on Thursdays where we just talk about either books or videos that we're supposed to watch, and they're supposed to, you know, create discussion and about, you know, team culture and things like that. And so our recent theme has been Ubuntu, which is a term that was coined by the 2008 Boston Celtics team. And so we kind of talked about that for a bit. And now very frequently coach will just kind of, you know, throw the word Ubuntu in into a conversation, whether or not it makes total contextual sense or not. So that's pretty funny.
Hey, Docs, just between us here, has he just ever cracked you up with, I mean, do you guys sometimes, he'll say something and y'all just walk away shaking your head going, okay, that's Lars?
Yeah, I think it's just because he's so much smarter than all of us that we totally don't understand. We're not on the same wavelength, but a ton. We often walk away from conversations just like, wow, that was fun.
Yeah, but I tell you what, though, come game day, everybody's on the same page, though, aren't they? I mean, he really is a tremendous coach.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think just his attention to detail is something that, you know, my mental capacity probably couldn't withstand. And he is just every single day, if something's not right, we got to get it right. And, you know, that brings out the best in us. And while on a hot day, it might be, you know, stressful and kind of annoying, but by game day, we'll be ready and we'll be dialed, and owe a lot to him for qualities like that.
All right, everybody who's on this show for a first time gets a question from Pac at the end. But before we get to the question, Docs, we got to go back to this video, because I know you're from Philly, and you had a chance to throw out the first pitch at a Phillies game, right? Come on, we went and got the video now. I mean, what kind of arm we got here, huh?
It was a high fastball is what I call that. But no, it was a poor pitch, definitely nerves, hands were shaking a little bit. I think that's why I went high. But Matt threw a great pitch, so at least one of us got one.
Hey, Docs, what is it about throwing out the first? There are so many, I cannot tell you how many great athletes, professional athletes, I have spoken to, interviews, face-to-face, who've had that option to say throw out the first pitch, and they're scared to death, nervous, and thing goes all over the place. And I've never understood why that's ever been an issue. I mean, I've done this before. I got not an athletic bone in my body, and I hummed a strike like it was no big deal. And there are so many dudes that do that and go, oh, my God, I didn't know where that thing was going to go anywhere. What happens there? What's the story?
For me, in my experience, I was walking to the pitcher's mound, and not even the pitcher's mound. They moved us up a few feet, and you know, I just didn't look behind me until I turned around, and then I just kind of like, it was sort of tunnel vision. I got just like instant nerves, and my hands started shaking, and then sweaty palms, and I don't know, it just sailed on me.
Hey, but you got a cool jersey.
Yeah,
got a cool jersey.
Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
Hey, by the way, if they asked you to do it again, you think you go through the same process of, oh, my God, I don't know, can I just get this thing? I mean, can I get it going forward? Or do you think you'd go, like, hey, listen, I got this now. It's a piece of cake now.
I've had the embarrassment, so I'd probably try and hum one in pretty fast.
There you go. There you go.
That's a boy.
That's what I'm talking about. I go to the real heater now. None of this off-speed nonsense. Now, we're going to be throwing that bad boy in there. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. All right, before we let you go, we do this with every student athlete. During your incredible time at the University of Virginia, what has been your hardest class?
I would say I think it was my senior fall. I was a foreign affairs major, so it was politics and political theory and stuff like that. I took a modern political thought class. That was super tough. Reading guys like John Locke and The State of Nature, that took a toll on me for sure. And a lot of long nights writing papers and reading in that class for sure.
Got it. Well, listen, keep up the great work, man. Men's lacrosse, women's lacrosse in this league is just spectacular. And doesn't matter who you're playing, what day of the week, what night of the week, it's going to be great. And that Duke Virginia thing tomorrow is going to be out of sight. Look forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, brought to you by New York Life. Presenting sponsor.
Wait.
Right here, Packer and Durham.
Wait. Let me do it this way real quick. Okay. Ready, Meg? Here. Packer and Durham presented by.
Oh, look at that.
New York Life.
That's sharp. So you know what?
Right on the shelf, just as if I said it and it happened. Just like that.
They don't even need to send you anything. Smart people in Bristol can just go ahead and put that stuff
everywhere. No, we got it right there.
God, love that. New York Life. New York Life really has to love it.
Yeah.
But we keep talking. We will over-deliver. Over-deliver.
Couple things here before we get to a very important story that Packer is incredibly disappointed not to have been chosen for, I think.
Stunned.
Let's go to Food Lion's Food for Thought, staple of the Wednesday program. And that, of course, is three ACC teams are in action in the NCAA volleyball tournament today out in Omaha, Nebraska. That would be Pitt, Notre Dame, and Georgia Tech. So that is Food Lion's Food for Thought. All of that available, by the way, on ESPN+. Georgia Tech Lipscomb, Pitt against Long Island University, the Blackbirds. And Notre Dame against Army West Point. All that today out in Omaha. Look forward to those results. We'll share them with you tomorrow here on the program.
And as Katie pointed out, Louisville goes tomorrow. So there's your four ACC teams. Yep. Katie George with the coverage. She'll be great. She knows what she's talking about.
Oh, yeah. That's it. Absolutely. We said earlier in the program that the University of North Carolina – became the second school in as many days yesterday to announce their relationship with a branding company. This one is called Brander, B-R-A-N-D-R. And Bubba Cunningham and the athletic department started out the relationship because, remember, the law in North Carolina has not taken effect either. But North Carolina, the state, David Coburn, getting ahead of the game for the law that goes into effect on July 1. Well, North Carolina's going to do it in a different way. The Tar Heels got some of their most prominent former athletes engaged.
Beautiful feed from Marshall.
Lobbed to Johnson, and he knew what to do with that puppy.
It's over! Carolina has won the national championship!
Transition three from the right.
McAdoo! Carolina on the doorstep!
And the party is ready to begin on Franklin Street.
Berry stepping back and hitting the three.
Green for the dump.
May for the win.
Got it!
Luke May!
He got it!
Three.
3/10 of a second.
How about them Tar Heels? They are the national champions.
It's going to be cool. Now, I know it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea where this thing's going. I get it.
Yeah.
But it's where we're going, and nobody's going to put this reverse. I mean, so don't think it's going back to the days of yesteryear where, you know, there's no such thing as name, image. It's a different universe that we're walking into, and we're in it. So deal with it. So that's the real world.
Again, if you're a school, make sure we get the video. We want to show it. Some of the videos, Florida State and Carolina, both of them have been fantastic.
Excellent.
To announce these partnerships. Yeah. Yep. Really looking forward to seeing what the other ACC institutions come up with as they move forward in this completely new landscape of college athletics. Okay, final note today. According to the New York Post, a site called Bonus Finder has launched a new contest this week to find an MLB professional food tester. The winner will be given $500 as well as a budget for food and travel, according to the contest page, to go to every MLB stadium to taste their hot dogs.
I'm in. I mean, am I not the perfect candidate for that, Wes? Now, we've already discussed with you that you're not necessarily a hot dog guy. I would do it in a millisecond. A millisecond.
Yeah.
Well, all but one. I've tried those Dodger dogs. They're overrated. I would go everywhere else and do that. I would love to do that.
All right.
Just to go watch the baseball.
You got to review the hot dogs based on appearance, color, flavor, complexity, quality of meat, bun quality, flavor, sauce, and topping generosity and value of money.
Got it. Layup. So easy.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.